Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Something from the Cellar, a chance for us to revisit some of our vintage conversations that resigned in the White Wine Question Time Cellar with almost 300 episodes in our back catalogue to choose from. In this episode, we're giving you a little amuse-bouche to get your mouth watering for our forthcoming episode with, well, frankly, kitchen royalty, superstar chef Rick Stein. An episode with him drops this Friday, so to get your juices flowing, we're devoting the next 40 minutes to some fellow culinary legends. First up, it's actress, cook, and best-selling author Faye Ripley. Here she shares her dream dinner party, as well as recounting the night that a fussy A-lister came for dinner and gave her a taste of a nightmare dinner party. Can you cook up for me your dream dinner party menu, complete with your dream dinner party guest list? What are you cooking? Who's coming for tea?
Do you know what? I have been asked this over the years.
Oh, sorry.
You know, No. But I'm going to qualify that. No, it's a good question, because I think people have heroes and they want to, you know, the dream would be, oh, you know, maybe I could meet. And in the past, I think I have given a list of sort of amazing people that I would like to come over for dinner. But it has changed.
Yeah, and I think the pandemic changed that, don't you?
Yeah, and just getting older. And do you know what it is? What's changed is sometimes it's the meeting your heroes thing that has changed it. And it's a combination of, it can often be a little disappointing.
Oh, have you had that?
Too stressful.
Oh.
So some of the people that I would like would be food people, so there might be chefs and things. And I've had a couple of chefs. There is a very, very good chef who's a close friend of mine, and he's Italian. I won't name him. He knows who he is. And he's Michelin starred. And he ate something of mine. And I was literally, I thought I was going to have a stroke, right, first of all. And I was sort of looking at him, these sort of doughy eyes, sort of willing him to love it, and he just went, it's a bit dry. And that was it. And I was just like, oh,
wounded
forever. So I've sort of got to the point where my dream dinner party is kind of just my best mates, and a roast chicken. That's what I really think. And a show off pudding, because I do like a round of applause, so I always will do a show off pudding. Otherwise I'm a bit like, oh, all right, a bit casual about the meal, everyone. Hello. So I like to sort of be able to go, oh, God, it was nothing. Honestly, I've been running around all day and just threw it together. And yet, it's incredible. I use indoor fireworks to also add drama.
Do you really?
Obviously. Put it in the top, honestly. It doesn't matter if it tastes awful. Everyone will go, wow. So, I did write about it in the... I wrote about a dinner party that I had for, let's say, some A-listers. And it was for an actress. And I hugely admired her. I still do as an actress. But I went to too much trouble. I went overboard. It was embarrassing. Like,
tried
I needed to be more casual with it. I tried way too hard. I think I aged 10 years in the process. She was so rude.
No!
She was so rude. And first of all, she was on a diet, which she didn't tell me about. I'd sent emails going, any dietary requirements, you know. And anyway, she had a photo shoot and her partner were on diets and basically only having water. And I'd done an 8-course taster menu.
No.
And by the end, my final pavlova with indoor fireworks in, I swear, I was so close to shoving it in her face. When she put a hand up to my face to go, no, she didn't want it. Oh, I tell you. And do you know what? Never sent a thank you card. Never sent a text.
No.
So I'm done. I'm done with my heroes. I just want my mates round.
That's
sorry.
Devastating.
I know.
She was at your house as well.
Yeah, because you sometimes, you know, doing the jobs that we do, we meet people and have friends that are sort of really other people's heroes and yours sometimes. And, you know, not all the time. But anyway, lesson learnt. My best friend lives 4 doors down from me, but just by coincidence.
How nice.
So I'll just have her around.
Yeah,
and
see,
her lovely family.
I'm with you. I think sometimes a good chicken and your best friends is hard to beat.
It's hard to beat.
And
so there you go.
In lockdown, that's all I wanted. I wasn't missing fancy restaurants or I just missed people and company and the ability to touch somebody on the arm while you're laughing and not feel like you were going to be diseased by the end of it.
I know what you mean. Although I was lucky enough because my friend lives in my street that we were often able to sort of, you know, be at a distance in a garden or go for a walk at a distance because we were right there next to each other. So she saved me. We were all sort of saved by each other's family, actually. So we were very lucky.
Did you cook a lot in lockdown?
Oh, yes. I mean, well, the thing about the lockdown thing, and there's a, you know, obviously I am aware this is just a small, privileged minority, but it hit at a time when my kids would have and should have, because it would have been better for them. So I'm purely talking selfishly, awful for them, obviously, but they would have been out, probably taking drugs and abusing alcohol. And but it stopped that for a while. So I didn't have to worry about where they were. They had to be basically suckling on mother's breast again. And I was delighted with that result. Obviously, I was aware there's a terrible, fearful pandemic going on. I was really worried. By the way, I was volunteering at the vaccine centre for a year. So I did. I was partaking in the whole event. But as a sidebar, I was so grateful for that little bit of time
with them
that I captured with my kids. As I say, I don't think it was great for them. I think they would tell a different story. But I was able to cook for them to, you know, they were forced into a relationship with me that they would have long since and have long since bunged in the bin.
Totally.
They're
because
out. They're
their,
out.
Because of their age, which is the most natural
age,
thing in the world. But it is hard, isn't it? I mean, I think we might be similar as parents, Faye. I just want to hold him close forever. And he's nearly 15 now, my son. You're ahead of me there. I miss being the mother of a young child desperately some days, don't you?
I'm so broody. I'm all the time. My daughter's actually now 20.
She's 20.
And I mean, it's not right, but I'm encouraging an early pregnancy. I'm actively hiding contraception. It's not, it's, it, just, I'm like, I was an old mum in the first place. I can't hang about. I understand it's your life, but what about mine? And my 16-year-old son, I'll give it another year and then I'll start going in there as well, saying, come on, what you got for me? But anyway, that time has become a sort of, you know, obviously it was what it was in so many different ways for so many different people, but there was just a percentage of it that I was grateful to be holding on to my kids for.
Yeah, I hear you. Next up, we're diving back into our conversation with the brilliant Dame Prue Leith. With an extensive list of accolades to her name, she's a businesswoman, a chef, an entrepreneur, a TV personality, and of course, a Bake Off judge. This lady never stops. And let me tell you, she doesn't mess around.
The first 25 years of my life, I was building up my business. So I was first of all a caterer. I was, you know, I started in a bedsitter cooking people's dinners, going around the tube with my ingredients in one hand and my tools in the other.
And then, I mean, you really were a one-woman band to begin with, weren't you, Prue?
Yes, I was, yeah. Absolutely.
And you were doing corporate lunches, corporate dinner parties, cooking for businesses, really.
And cooking for housewives, cooking for posh women in Kensington. And, you know,
oh, were you? Well, yeah, and then they tried to pass it off as their own.
Yeah, they did. One woman who I cooked her dinner parties for her. And one day I heard through the hatch, you know, she had a hatch from her, between her kitchen and her dining room. And I could hear everything that was going on in the dining room. And somebody said, this food is absolutely delicious. Can I have your cook's name? Because I'd like her to do my director's lunches for me in the city. And she said, oh, no. She said, that girl in the kitchen, she's just there to do the washing up. She said, I do all the cooking. I wouldn't dream of having a cook. And I was so bloody indignant. I wanted to in through the hatch and put them all right.
Did you?
I didn't. What I did do, though, was I had hung up all the coats when the guests arrived. So I put one of my business cards into every pocket I could find on all the coats.
Touché. In that
net. And I wrote on the top of the cards, your dinner was cooked by. And I tell you what, it worked, because the next morning that guy rang me up and he said, I really thought your dinner was absolutely delicious. And he said, when he asked me if I'd do his lunches. And he said, you're a very good cook. He said, but I was far more impressed with your marketing skills.
It was brilliant.
So that was my first. So then I opened a restaurant because I'd always wanted a restaurant, but you can't open a restaurant if you don't have any money. So I started doing catering first. Then I opened a restaurant in 1969. And then in 1974, I realized I really needed a chef school, a cookery school, because I didn't want to have to train chefs once they got to me. I wanted them to arrive trained, and I wanted them to pay me to train them. And then I could hire them rather than me having to pay them and then train them.
You're so smart, Prue. And also, you have just skipped over the bit where in between opening a restaurant and opening a cookery school, you were awarded a Michelin star.
Did have a Michelin star. It took a long time, but we did get one.
You did.
And I got Businesswoman of the Year.
You did. Both achievements, by the way. I mean, obviously, Businesswoman of the Year is only ever going to be won by a woman. But to become awarded, to win that Michelin star, you were woman. Very rare in the world of chefs, because women, A, didn't own their own restaurants, and B, the hours were never chef-friendly for a woman.
For women, no. Yeah. They aren't now.
No.
Because they never will be until men are prepared to look after the children at home. You know,
quite.
Because you look at Michelin star chefs, women, they're nearly all, they don't have children or they're not married. So that's a problem. But actually, to be fair, I didn't really gain that Michelin star. The chap who did is Alex Floyd, who's a top chef. And he got us the Michelin star, really, not me. I owed the joint. He got it.
But you, Prue, you owned the joint. You know, you didn't come through multiple kitchens. You were not self-taught. You studied at the Cordon Bleu School of Cookery. But you hadn't had the same route to business as a lot of your competitors. You have trailed your own, you know, path really in so many ways.
No, I did the three businesses, catering, restaurant and cookery school. And then I realised that what I really wanted to do, I was all the time, at the same time, I was writing for food for newspapers. I was the Daily Mail, you know, food lady.
Where does this come from, Prue, this ability to see an opportunity and bring it to life?
I don't know. My mother was an actress and she had a theatre company. And she was pretty brave, I realise now. So I didn't think so at the time. I just thought she was, you know, my mum's an actress, you know. But, you know, she was... You know, she decided that we were in South Africa. And she got very frustrated because the sanctions against South Africa, because it was apartheid time then, were really very restrictive. So she couldn't do... she couldn't do any plays, new plays in England. And John Mortimer at the time was the head of the Playwrights Guild or something, or Writers Guild. And so she came to England to bash him around the head and basically to say, look, if you want to change apartheid in South Africa, you're not going to do it by burning the books. What you need to do is to make sure that plays, especially plays that are going to enlighten people and make them realise, you know, there were wonderful plays about apartheid, which my mother was putting on. But she wanted to have English playwrights as well as just South African playwrights. And her solution was to come to England and fight him. And she did. And she persuaded him. And he got the Writers Guild to drop their sanction.
And we must remember that... times were very different back then. Your mother would have been quite alone in that as a woman coming to a different country to try and demand change. You know, that's really something.
And she was a really good actress. And she used to campaign against apartheid. She belonged to an organisation called the Black Sash, which was a women's group. And they were sort of very sort of middle-class educated women who stood on the town hall steps and just peacefully holding placards saying, you know, something about apartheid being wrong. And I remember her coming home one day absolutely spattered with egg yolks because people had been pitching eggs at these women.
Extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so that's where you get some of your chutzpah from, for sure. Yeah. But we talk about, you know, this first revolution. Alongside your business life, there was a very different kind of life to those of your friends happening in your personal life. You'd come to London, you were staying with friends of the family, the Krugers. And you became Rain's mistress, as you've said, for 13 years, which in so many ways enabled you, it freed you up, Prue, to build your business, didn't it? Because you weren't running home to be part of a relationship in the conventional sense.
And I wasn't, I wasn't having to cook for a husband every night. Absolutely. And I once said that in at a literary festival. And the next morning, the Daily Mail ran a piece saying, I never asked Rain to leave his wife because I was very happy. I was building my business. I didn't have to be, I had none of the duties of wife, and I had all the pleasures of somebody who loved me and so on. And so I wasn't pressing for marriage. Daily Mail then ran a headline saying, Prue Leith recommends adultery as the best solution to successful business or something. No, I was not recommended. So, but yes, we did have 13 secret years, and nobody ever guessed because we were very discreet about it. But it was easier in a way because he was a family friend and he was the chairman of my company and he'd helped me enormously. And everybody knew that we were great friends and that he was my sort of mentor because he was 20 years older than me. And so, if I mean, we didn't go out to dinner or anything that would create any kind of suspicion. So we just, but you know, if people saw us together, they thought it was because we worked together.
Yeah. So you had a lot more free time to focus on being a businesswoman.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Finally, it's Simon Rimmer, restaurateur, TV chef, and now podcaster. Here he reminds us that food should always make you feel sexy. Think on that next time you stick your hands into a bag of crisps. And also tells us why it's important to give up-and-coming chefs the chance to flourish, as well as talking about his love and talent for interviewing, even though it was never originally on his menu for life.
I'd avoided doing a podcast for ages. My agent kept saying, you should do a podcast. You're a broadcaster. You need to do a podcast. I said, but I've got nothing to say. And the premise of it came about when I was having a conversation with Tom Kerridge. We're having a cup of coffee together. And
what a lovely man, eh?
Really lovely man. And he sort of said, oh, yeah. And, you know, I remember reading White Heat by Marco Pierre White. And I decided that's the chef I want to be. And there was something there that made me think, wow, we've all got that sort of pivotal moment, not just as chefs, but in our careers, where you go, that was the moment when I either decided by default or design that that's the way my world is going to go. And so that's where the premise of it came from. And I've been incredibly flattered that literally everybody that I've invited on has said yes. I think, you know, because I've been around a long time and I know everybody and they feel safe. You know, they know that I can speak chef talk with them and also I can talk nonsense with them and telly talk and whatever else. And it's been joyous. I love it. I absolutely love it. This week I've done Michael Caine's and Nadia's and Nisha Katona and just very, very different characters. But, you know, just lovely, joyous thing to do.
And you know what? You can hear when somebody loves to interview, and you do. And it was never what you came into telly to do. You're first and foremost, you were chefing, right? You were cooking on telly.
Yeah, that's it. And I think, you know, I've got to say that hats off to Tim. I think that working with Tim, whilst, you know, people sort of sometimes criticise his style, Tim is he's a perfectionist. His level of kind of research, and I like the fact that I think, as we all know, the best way to be an interviewer is to listen. That's the thing. Yeah. You know, you want to have a framework, but I think if you listen and then respond to what you hear, but don't lose track of it, I think that just comes with practice. And I do
it
love
does.
It. Yeah.
But I think in the first instance, you've got to be interested. And and some people just genuinely aren't. You know, my dad, for example, would never sit down and find an hour's worth of questions to ask somebody, but he'd gladly sit and listen to them. I, meanwhile, would have, you know, clipboards with question series A of questions, backup C, the list, you know, so on and so forth, because I love it. And I'm fascinated in people's growth. And I think that's what you're profiling with the chefs that you feature. the Rick Stein episode, I absolutely loved. There was a brilliant moment where he said, was it you that said that your business partner had likened, what he said was, that a great meal at a great restaurant should compel you to go upstairs and have sex.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true.
You do? You believe that?
Yeah, I do. Well, I think it's that whole thing that, and not necessarily with the person that you're with. I don't think it's about sort of saying, I want sex now. It should make you feel sexy. You know, yeah. I think that a good meal, and equally, a bad meal makes you feel grumpy. It doesn't matter where you are. If you go to a Greasy Spoon, have a bacon butty, and the bacon's rubbish and the bread's rubbish, then it makes you feel rubbish. But if you have a really good bacon butty on a very base level, you think, whoa, yeah. You know, and I do. I think it should. And I genuinely say that to all of our teams that, you know what, if we don't leave, make people leave here feeling that they want to have sex, then, you know, we've got something wrong.
I'd love to see the interns on the first day going, what?
Yeah, it's kind of quite interesting when I take my mum and dad, who are 88 and 84, to the restaurants, though.
Yeah. Well, my next question is, how many hotels do you own now so that you can facilitate such a sensory pleasure?
I'm missing a trick. I'm missing a trick on that one, Kate.
But how does your wife, Ali, feel when you explain your workspace like that? Because you guys met, I mean, years ago when you were waiting tables together. And she's also a chef, is that right?
Yeah. I mean, she's not anymore, but yeah, she was. She's a trained chef, yeah. I think that everybody who works in our industry really thinks it. It's a really brilliant industry. I think that... I think one of the greatest things it can do, for example, at the moment, we've got a young lad who's working with us who we're just taking on as an apprentice here at Greens. And he's 17 and he's at catering college. And it would be not unfair to say that he had a pretty tough time at school, didn't do particularly well, had a few kind of troubles with other people. And he's come and working in our kitchen and we've embraced him. It's an incredibly inclusive environment, the hospitality industry. And I think whether it be in a kitchen or whether it be out front, you meet every single walk of life. I think, you know, at the moment, there's a fantastic movement in our country about inclusivity, no matter what creed, colour, sexual orientation, etc., etc. I think hospitality has always been that. You know, I've worked in hospitality now for 34 years, and it has never, ever been an issue what your background was, creed, colour, religion, sexual orientation, anything at all. And I think that's the greatest thing about it. And I think if you've got kids who maybe need a little bit of kind of dynamism about them or a little bit of confidence, hospitality is a great place to kind of to discover that. So I think, you know, you do meet from kind of shy people who are coming out of their shell to complete and utter hedonists who really, but for hospitality, would probably be locked up.
Well, that actually reminds me of 15, Jamie Oliver's kind of social enterprise restaurant where he brought together a bunch of young men and women and set them to work. And actually we saw for ourselves how the fertilizer that he put around their feet in terms of opportunity, potential, and just saying, we believe in you, you know, that we believe you can do this. Sometimes that is all people need to blossom and flourish. And actually, you're right. The hospitality industry, it's a dance, right?
It's brilliant. And, you know, that whole thing that you are a team. If you're not a team, it falls apart. And you know when, you know, when you've got a weak link in that chain. But at the end of it, no matter how hard it's been, that first drink at the end of the night when you've all finished your shift is fantastic, you know, and you're all sort of there. And like, you know, in the kitchen in particular, I mean, I'm not a shouty chef at all. I never have been.
You're not?
But no.
Yeah, that's rare.
Yeah. It's weird because I think now there's a huge move in our industry to say this is actually really abhorrent. And I've always felt it. I think maybe because, you know, that isn't my background. You know, like you said at the start, Kate, you know, I'm trained in fashion textile design. So I wanted to be, because I didn't really know what I was doing. So never mind the rest of the team. So I felt my dad said this great thing when I first started employing people. He said, when you employ people, you need to give people the opportunity to succeed rather than the likelihood to fail. And I really like that. And I think if you use that in any mantra in life, then it works. So, you know, and don't get me wrong, there are times when people need kind of, you're like, look, you know, you can't do that, you can't do that. But you've got to give people the opportunity to flourish. And I think that, you know, that's what I always want to do in all walks of life.
Well, as I did explain to you, I have done some deep, deep research on you. And I know that you have retained so many of your key staff members. So absolutely, that validates everything you've just said. You've got people that have been with you, some staff members, for 20 years.
Yeah. Well, I've got, well, tonight, upstairs in the kitchen, I've got Matt, who's worked with me for 27 years on the front. Reese, who's our front house manager here, he's been here 28 years. And then because we're a bit short staffed, then I've got two former employees who've moved on to kind of like, you know, to be promoted, who now work in hospitality catering in sort of schools. And because I'm short, I can still phone them up. So I've got Tom and Marv upstairs with me as well tonight, who don't work for me anymore. They both worked for me for sort of 6-7 years each, and I said, listen, really short this week, don't fancy your shift. They've both gone, oh my god, yeah. So it's like getting the band back together. And so, yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, and that's really lovely, you know, that you still want to do that,
especially after the 18 months that we've all lived through. But I know the hospitality industry more than any, I mean, there's lots of industries that have really felt the brunt of this, but you guys particularly.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the possible exception of kind of theatres, we've probably been, you know, the hardest hit. And whilst, yeah, and I think, you know, whilst we, you know, did takeaway and stuff, then our biggest site in the middle of Manchester called Albert Schloss, I mean, that is a big live music, live entertainment, cabaret, beer keller with loads and loads of food. And that's been shut for 18 months because it didn't make any sense to open it. It's such a big site, it made no sense. And so, you know, from a business point of view, suddenly what is the biggest restaurant that we have was taking no money. And obviously the other side of it is that for somebody like myself who's very much in the public eye, then again, you have to be very careful that, you know, it isn't sort of saying, well, it's all right for you, you know, you're still on telly earning, like, you know, earning loads of money. And unfortunately, it is a reality, you know, but still now I'm not taking any money from any of the restaurants. I've got 14 restaurants and at the moment I'm taking nothing from them because there's no money to take.
Wow. So actually, if you didn't have Sunday brunch...
Honestly, Kate, we've been so lucky that stayed on right the way through. We had 1 week when we were off.
How have you managed to keep that going with all of the difficulties? I mean, shooting with COVID restrictions is so tricky. It's rough.
Well, we did. We had 6 weeks when we filmed from home, which was fine. I kind of quite liked it, actually. It was quite fun. And then we've done, up until very recently, just a really skeleton staff, you know. So down to three cameras rather than five. Anyone that came on as a guest, you know, like, you know, if you're a guest on a show, Kate, you'll take your massive entourage of kind of 25 people with you.
It's just obviously. You. Do your own makeup.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, no one could have their entourage. So it's different, but fun. And I think also things have changed, you know, I guess even say pre-COVID, probably doing a podcast, then you want to do face-to-face with people. Now we're so used to this, you know, and don't get wrong, it's still the best thing is being face-to-face, but we're now used to this and it doesn't seem alien anymore. And I think what was really nice, I actually think that doing it from home, it sort of really felt like a nice thing to do because everyone else was in the same boat and you sort of think, well, we can't get in the studio. So you're seeing, you know, what happens in my house and Tim's house, and it just felt like, oh, well, they're in the same boat as us, you know, rather than being in a, here we are in a glossy studio, way, you're going, yeah, I'm stuck in my house as well.
Yeah, and this is what I've got in the fridge. Deal with it.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining me this week for our weekly Something from the Cellar episode. If you love what you've heard and you want to go back and enjoy more great stories from the featured guests today, you can search for them by using their guest names in the search bar, or you can scroll through the back catalogue. This week, we featured the lovely Faye Ripley, Dame Prue Leith, and Simon Rimmer. There's plenty to check out while you wait for our brand new episode to drop this Friday with the one and only Rick Stein. I'll see you then.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the ACAST Creator Network.